Maybe we'll have some comments from the panel of our experts about when do you think about a PI3 kinase inhibitor in this setting. So, Dr. Wyatt?
Yeah, I think generally I will use a PI3 kinase inhibitor in kind of those double refractory patients as a planned bridge to something else, or occasionally, you know, in somebody who really couldn't tolerate or was inappropriate for a BTK inhibitor.
Yeah. Dr. Brown, when do you think about that?
Right. So we've done some work suggesting that the toxicity level of PI3 kinase inhibitors is less with increasing age and also less among unmutated patients. And so I consider a good candidate to be an elderly patient who may particularly have some cardiac or renal comorbidities that make it not so easy to use BTK or BCL2. And I actually have used PI3 kinase inhibitors before one or the other of those drugs in that context with some success. It's also better if that patient happened to have had prior chemoimmunotherapy, which also reduces the risk of some of the immune toxicities.
And so you would think about that even sometimes in the second line regimen for some of those patients who've had chemoimmunotherapy and have these comorbidities?
Well, if they're elderly and have those comorbidities, yeah.
And Dr. Weirdo, when do you think about use of PI3 kinase inhibitors?
I mean, we worry about the toxicities associated with that class of drugs, and that's been the biggest challenge. The progression-free survival curves in the relapse setting are shorter. The median progression-free survival tends to be shorter than BTK inhibitor-based therapy and BCL2 small molecule inhibitor, so I tend to use it later in preference to those other two classes of drugs. But it has activity. It has activity in high-risk patients. I would not consider using it in a patient who is refractory to ibrutinib, who progresses on ibrutinib, because there is some data that indicates that there's not a lot of activity with another B-cell receptor signaling pathway inhibitor if patients develop resistance to, for example, a BTK inhibitor.
So, Dr. Brown, you alluded earlier that schedule may play a role in mitigating some of the toxicities of PI3 kinase inhibitors, and there have been some novel agents that have been used on other schedules in clinical trials. Maybe explain a little bit more about the role of schedule in these toxicities, and do you ever think about that when you're using a standard of care PI3 kinase inhibitor?
Right. So the concern is that PI3 kinase inhibitors may result in loss of Tregs, they're immunomodulatory, and that the continuous dosing sustains that. And so the question is, if you could dose for an interval and then give a break, you might have some recovery of that immune function that might mitigate toxicity. And there are two sort of broad views one could take of that: to dose, say, for a week and then take several weeks off, almost like we did with chemoimmunotherapy, or you could dose for a couple days in a week and then take the rest of the week off and then redose. But we don't have yet any biological basis for choosing one of those, so I haven't done that outside the context of a clinical trial. They're both being explored in clinical trials. In terms of clinical practice, mostly I would do a hold and dose reduction, but still use the drug continuously, since that's how both Adela and duvelisib are approved.
Great. So thank you to all of our panelists. This has really been an exciting discussion and a very exciting time and great horizon for CLL in the future with these agents.